This is Jake Rosen of WFTE, and I'm sitting here with David Rosen, with whom I had the pleasure of attending 2016 Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. And we're here to tell each other what we saw, because maybe even though we both looked at the same thing, we saw different things, and to discuss it, and to tell you what it was like to actually be there. Well, Dave, we've talked about the first 3 days of the convention. Now we're up to the final day of the convention. We've talked about what it was like to get there, what it was like to be hot, what it was like to see everybody else who was working there, how impressive it was, how many people it took to do this thing. What were your impressions of the final day of the convention?
Well, Dad, I want to thank you again for inviting me, and I had such a wonderful time. The fourth day of the convention, we didn't attend it in person. We'd gotten a great sense of what the event was like. And so when I watched it at home, I had a different, you know, perspective. And of course, the fourth day was interesting because the third day had this incredible star-powered lineup: President Obama, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, Vice President Joe Biden, and Vice Presidential nominee Tim Kaine. So the fourth day, by comparison, had relative no names. I mean, other than the nominee herself, you know, you're talking about people like Chelsea Clinton, and then you were talking about really, you know, people that no one had heard about in the general public. You had this guy.
Well, but, you know, that cuts both ways. Nobody ever heard about the woman who introduced Obama, and yet she was dynamite.
I'm not discrediting them. In fact, what I was going to follow up with is that all of the people who spoke before Hillary Clinton were quite impressive. And sorry about that. And I was just trying to go over the list of who those people were, but there was this Reverend so-and-so.
That guy from North Carolina?
Who was really amazing.
He was a wonderful
speaker. They don't keep all these guys online, but what was that Reverend's name? And he was very fiery. And then this general was very fiery. Then they had the former spokesperson for Ronald Reagan, who was, you know, delivered. I mean, they really tacked hard to the right on the fourth day. And then, you know, then Chelsea was the softest thing in comparison. Yeah, I won't say that the Reverend was hard to the right, but, you know, the people that they had were real right-wingers in some cases.
Well, what do you think about that? How did you react to that?
Did you notice that?
I noticed that. To tell you the truth, I noticed a swing to the right in this convention the minute the vote was done to decide who the candidate was. The minute Bernie Sanders was no longer, and the Sanders supporters were no longer factors in what might happen, because it had already happened and the vote went and Hillary got the vote. From that moment, I felt the entire tone of the convention changed. I felt from that moment on it moved steadily to the right, whereas before, the themes of the speeches and what was what concerned the convention were social justice. As soon as she became the candidate officially, the theme of the convention became national security and law and order. And it became increasingly that. And the speakers, for the most part, were people who wouldn't have been out of place on the Republican platform.
Well, and I think that's a generalization. So let's read through. I mean, come on. Some of these people would not be on the Republican platform.
No, I'm saying in general.
Nancy Pelosi.
In general.
Okay. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who said, "Hi, I'm Michael Jordan." And he said, "Just kidding, I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but I just said that because I know Donald Trump wouldn't know the difference."
Right. I mean, he poked fun at Trump's racism, and he did it very effectively. And Jabbar is great. But he was unusual in that respect. I mean, you had guys who worked for Ronald Reagan who were making speeches. You had guys who were planners of the... Listen, it got so bad. You remember we were there then, Leon Panetta spoke. The audience interrupted him, nearly drove him off the stage, chanting, "No more war, no more war." And he had to stop talking. Remember that?
That's right. There were agitations from top to bottom the whole time.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that Monday and through the first half of Tuesday, none of that occurred. None of that occurred. That was not the tenor of the discussions. The tenor of the discussions then was, how you could renovate America, how you could change the system for the better, how you could get rid of money out of politics, how you could end income inequality. There was no discussion about projecting American military power, which I make out.
Okay, but you know, to be fair, they also had a great speech by this guy, Khizr Khan, who was this Muslim guy and died in service of the U.S. Army. And he really had a memorable speech, and I know some Muslim friends of mine were quite proud to see that. And then Medal of Honor winner, so yeah, you know, some, you know, a combat vet, Captain Florent Groberg. Then before that was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Then you had women of the Senate. You had Nancy Pelosi, civil rights leader Dolores Huerta.
Yeah, I know. You got the whole list there. I got it. I understand it. But what I'm, you know, it's interesting that you picked Douglas Huerta. Douglas Huerta was with the United Farm Workers, right?
Right.
That's her big claim to fame. Do you know that the United Farm Workers were the number one organization when they were an important organization opposing the free migration of Mexican workers into the United States? And they were implacable in demanding that undocumented aliens from Mexico be rounded up and deported. They were one of the biggest, they would fit right into the Donald Trump program. That's what they were. They were absolutely rotten where it came to the rights of immigrant workers was concerned. It was a disgrace, and she was in the forefront of that. Nobody talks about that now because it's uncomfortable. But that's the fact. I don't hear you commenting about that.
I'm shocked, but also my speech list of speakers started giving me some funny music. All right, well, I'll grant your point that the, you know, from the ashes or from the fertilizer of President Obama's liberal unification speech. Is that your phone, Dad?
No.
It's mine. Yours. Sorry. Sorry. Is that going to ruin our... Can you edit that out?
I'll cut it out. Yeah. Start again.
All right. That's right. From the backdrop of, you know, Biden, Obama, Kane, we had, you know, generals and people who didn't have the same national reach and were selected to broaden the base of the party.
No, they were selected to appeal to Republicans. Yeah, you can say broaden the base of the party, but I'm saying appeal to Republicans. You could broaden the base of the party by appealing to workers. If Bernie was the candidate, these speeches wouldn't have been given, and he would have been trying to broaden the base of the party by appealing to white workers who are now being attempted to be seduced by Trump with racist, anti-immigrant slogans. Bernie would have tried to explain to them where their true interests were in opposing income inequality and in fighting for unionization, not in fighting against immigrant workers. So there's many ways of expanding the base of the Democratic Party. And the right-wing way is the Clinton way, and that's what they're doing.
Okay, well, that was your perspective of the setup. And I think that there was certainly a militarized vote of confidence that was overt, and I concur with you on that. What did you think of Hillary Clinton's acceptance of the nomination speech?
Well, it was not great oratory. It was a competent speech, but it was on the wrong topic. It would have been a perfectly fine speech if she was running in 2008. But she's not running in 2008. She's running in 2016. Her speech assumes that she's talking to people who think that everything is going along fine and there's really a recovery. But everything we see about us is that working people, the average person, feels that if there's a recovery, she or he is being left out. That there's not enough jobs and there's not enough pay.
But to be fair, she said that. She said that the recovery,
that was not her
15
point.
Million jobs, you know, which was then fact-checked on NPR, which said that the true delta of, you know, from start to finish was 10 million. However, it's 15 million private sector jobs since the lowest point, which occurred after the Obama inauguration, you know, a year, actually.
It doesn't matter whether it's 10 million jobs or it's 15 million jobs. That's a lot of jobs. 50%. But the question
difference is,
are these jobs with good pay? And the answer is no. They're jobs. Well, these are jobs with crap pay.
But she acknowledged that. She then said that, you know, I understand that, and the, you know, so the high, you know, the guiding light of my campaign is social justice and better wages for all. I mean, she was very clear on. She said that.
Yeah, but she doesn't believe that, but she did say that. Yeah, but she also said that the guiding light of a campaign was two other things, at various times. The guiding light of a campaign was the American security. So if the guiding light of a campaign is better jobs, how can it be security? Those are two different things. Can't have two guiding lights. Can only have one guiding light.
Well,
that's why people don't trust her, because she just says things.
Well, that's different also. But I don't think that despite having people who were Republicans on the platform, that she can be, you know, blamed for, her speech. I thought her speech was good.
What do you think of Chelsea Clinton's speech?
I didn't think her speech was good.
It's an interesting thing about her speech. I heard it on TV, and I could hear every word she said, and it was fine that way. But what I read was people in the hall couldn't hear her. And you and I remember what it's like in the hall when the speech is dull, people start to talk, and you just don't hear it. And it's just as well that the person isn't speaking, because functionally you can't hear the person, and it's just taking up time. It sounded to me as if that was what it was with Chelsea Clinton. Anyway, I don't see why it was a good point that her mother was a wonderful mother. Why is that such a good point to be making? Why would that make her a good president?
Well, because people want to humanize people.
Well, do you really believe that Hillary Clinton went to every dance recital, every piano recital, all the soccer games? Is that conceivable? Not to me. I know what it was like trying to keep up with your soccer games. You probably went to fewer than she did.
Well, I, who cares?
Well, that's my point. If who cares, why was that the point of the speech? Exactly. These things should be places. You like the guy, the Muslim fellow whose son got killed in a war. You felt what he said had resonance.
Listen, I didn't say I like the guy because I like, you know, supporting
the
militaristic, glorious methodology of, you know, conscripting soldiers to.
Yeah,
I
didn't yet attack you for that. I was contrasting his speech with Chelsea's speech. I was saying he was making a political point. I don't see that she made a political point. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
Chelsea Clinton's functionality was not to deliver a political point. It was. You know, first of all, Hillary Clinton did some good things in her speech. She did some masterful things, in fact, when she referenced some of the speakers. And she alluded to the fact that she had personally organized all this stuff. And everything that you had received, that the signs that you'd received in the stands and everything else was very planned, thought out.
It was planned and thought out, but I don't think that it was a good plan, or that what she was talking about and in the way that she was talking about it was what these Democrats need to emphasize if they want to win this election.
Absolutely. But you're right. She touched a lot of things, and there were a lot of focus group things there. But I mean, you know, basically the bottom line is, you know, before this event, before this convention, she was behind to Donald Trump in the polls. There was 50% of her own party who was so far out the door that they, you know, were not going to support her.
Her strongest argument, you know this, you saw this, you commented on this. The strongest argument we saw people make for her before her speech was It's either her or it's Donald Trump, and we can't have Donald Trump. Do you think that the speech that she made anybody that we met at that convention make a different argument on her?
100% yes. Yes. Yes, yes, and yes. And, you know, here's the thing. Not everyone's so hardlined. I mean, not everyone believes in, you know, this sweeping change that's going to happen overnight. I mean, this is a choice. You have a choice between two choices. One choice is either qualified or not qualified, but represents a direction that is very individualistic and unclear. She laid out a platform and said, look, I'm involved with every element of our current existing administration and government, and together we will continue to do the same things, and we will not be in a state of chaos, and we will maintain a vision. And in that environment, you know, people will be allowed to have a say, and we will be collaborative, and we may not always agree, but I'm going to do my best to listen, and I may not always be successful, but I'm going to try.
Well, I think that was her message. If they keep doing the same thing, what she's saying is they're going to keep making wars. I'm against making wars, and I believe that she's not. I believe that she would try to make wars. And you know what a lot of people find attractive in Trump? The fact that he won't make war. All of the political military establishment, the national security establishment, are shocked by Trump because they say, golly, he's backtracking from the American leadership in war. They want to make war. They got an enemy in China. They got an enemy in Russia. I'm at a loss to know what it is that the Chinese have done that the Americans need to go to war over. What is it that the Russians have done that the Americans need to go to war over? What all of a sudden are they fighting about? I think it's dangerous and wrong. I got nothing for the Chinese fascist system. I got nothing for the Russian fascist system. But you know what? There's no difference of interest between the American imperialist system and the Chinese and the Russians that we need to go to war about. But these liberal imperialists, they don't think that. She's prepared to go to war with them, not in the homeland. She's not prepared to invade China, but on their peripheries. It's dangerous. The people who were chanting at Leon Panetta, no more war, were saying a good thing.
I don't disagree with you, but that's where we started. I mean, you know, we've posterized, we've distilled everything into quite literally black or white. And so just with respect to Hillary Clinton's acceptance of the inauguration speech, and every single Bernie supporter, every single person who is saying that Hillary Clinton is a treasonous person or a war criminal or you know, a hawk or, you know, basically a hypocrite or, you know, a criminal or, you know, in the pocket of corporate interest or any of the things that they say about her, notwithstanding, those all may be true. And I'm not saying that they're not true or are true, because I don't know. I honestly don't know. I only know what people say.
What you're saying is she's less dangerous than Trump.
I'm not comparing her to Trump. I'm asking about her acceptance speech. And for me, the fundamental theme of her acceptance speech came at the 23-minute mark when she said, our nation's motto is E Pluribus Unum, out of many come one. And you cannot have a worldview or a role model or leadership from somebody who is a paternalistic autocrat. And that was the point of the speech. Now, the policies are divergent, diversive. They may be divisive. They may be dangerous. They may be apocalyptic, or they may all be bluster and bull. But the speech was about a spectrum of the United States of America, and the convention was, and the fourth day, and all of this was about working together to create progress. And I don't know that this isn't a big con. I don't think that, you know, anyone should write anyone else a blank check. But I do think that it could have been worse. I think it could have been worse. Call me crazy. I think she, from a political, I'm not talking about a moral, but a political perspective, hit it out of the park when she said, as you've heard, I've dedicated my life to public service, and the service part came naturally to me, though the public part didn't. And that resonates with people. I think she said, when she said, I know why people don't think they really know me, I get that because I've been guarded. And by acknowledging that, she, you know, broadened her appeal and her sales pitch. And I think that you have to give someone the benefit of what they say and what they state. Now, I have more than my share of people from people on the left to people on the right who contact me through social media who will say things like, you know, everything from Monsanto to Benghazi. And I don't know that any of them are wrong. I don't know that that if you can't blame Hillary Clinton for the details of Benghazi because she didn't pull the trigger, you can certainly blame her for the Iraq war vote. And at the end of the day, that matters.
But and you can blame her for the destruction of Libya.
Well, you can blame her for the disruption of Libya, too, but...
I'm not talking about Benghazi.
I get that, but, you know, to be fair, you know, Libya had a revolution.
I don't think that's being fair. Libya had an invasion. That's what Libya had.
Who invaded it?
NATO.
No.
With the Americans in support with bombs. They bombed the hell out of that country. I don't want to get involved in the discussion of Libya right now.
Well, we can discuss Libya when we re-engage in that war in 14 months. But, you know, in the meantime, let's talk about the person who will lead us there. so, you know, and it's not funny. But that is the problem with Hillary. That is the problem with Hillary. She is a hawk. And, you know, she believes that our fighting force is a way to go about things. I'd like to just be optimistic and say maybe she'll be a better president going from 2016 to 2020 even. That
let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this. Do you believe that the Republicans are going to make deals with her any more than they made deals with Obama? Do you think Mitch McConnell, if he's in the minority or if he's in the majority, is going to agree to legislation, or Paul Ryan is going to agree to legislation that she would require in order to bring most of her promises to life? Or is this all rhetorical? She can't do anything any more than Obama could do.
So I think this brings us to a new part of the conversation, which is not how was her speech or how was the convention, but what will a Hillary Clinton presidency look like?
And no, that is no, a but, very no, but you see, to me, it is about the speech. Because, after all, the question I'm asking you is a question that she and her advisors undoubtedly ask themselves at some point. What realistic prospects are there for doing anything? If McConnell is going to do exactly the same thing with her as he did with Obama, or if Ryan is going to do it, or the Tea Party people are going to do it, then all this stuff about I can get it done is irrelevant. The only thing that's relevant is setting forth an image which people in America will respond to and repudiate the McConnells and the Ryans. That would be the only important thing in her administration because she can't get any legislation.
All right. Well, you know, I think that there's, you know, a few different tracks here. So one is, does she have political capital? Can she expend it? And does she have more or less political capital than President Obama? And, you know, I have to imagine that she has more political capital than Obama.
Why? Or she's white?
A, because she's white, yes, 100% yes. There was a countercultural, hyper-right-wing...
Racist
movement against, you know, Obama, who they called a Muslim and everything else. And, you know, she said her little Methodist... Don't mean to be offensive, but she, you know, chanted her Methodist prayer. She's got more skills. She's going to be able to... But, you know, let's forget that for a second. She has to potentially have more capital because I think she has, if she wins, a pulpit that will have to, if any of these guys feel like there's a way forward or there's a new electorate or a new math, which will be the outcome of an election, you know, they'll have to take stock of a new calculus because you know, there was a belief that this Ted Cruz style was going to carry the day, even up into the Ted Cruz running for the Republican nomination, that filibustering and obstructionism was the strategy. The only we're gonna destroy Hillary with this Benghazi stuff. We're gonna say she's a crook, she's a liar. We're gonna do all this stuff, and we're gonna get someone between Scott Walker, Jeb Bush, or Ted Cruz to, you know, restore conservatism in America. And from that pulpit, we're going to have a majority, and we're going to, you know, rule from the county level to the federal level. And that might not bear fruit. Now, it might bear fruit. I'm not trying to be overly optimistic, even though if you're ever going to be optimistic, the day after the convention is the day to be optimistic. However,
I tell you the truth, I can't see any argument for voting for Hillary Clinton except to defeat Donald Trump. And I would be, if I could, if I needed to vote for Hillary Clinton and I could vote for her on a party ticket other than the Democratic Party ticket, I would vote for her that way, just to show the Democrats I'm not one of them. And I'm really only against Trump, and I'll support their candidate because she's the only realistic way to defeat Trump, but I don't want to do it on the Democratic ticket.
Well, as a man in New York, have the family's progressive part. Movement, what? How can you say to progressives who might be thinking the same thing you're thinking, how can they relegate, you know, someone who's supported such a corporate agenda for whatever reason? Maybe she thought that was the best she could get at the time. That's her sort of fallback, but nevertheless. But
well, in New York, you can do what I'm saying. You have a working family's party. They'll undoubtedly endorse her.
But there isn't a working family. But there isn't a party that's going to get you elected and have a convention in a major sports arena.
That's not my point. My point is, you want to vote for Hillary Clinton in New York. You have an opportunity to do it without having to be a Democrat. The vote will still count for her. It'll still count toward the electoral vote. You could do it on the working family's party. And in that case, you would not be just knuckling under to the Democrats. You would be saying, I am giving you qualified support. Qualified support.
Okay, but that's not – is she on the working party?
Yes, I'm sure she will be. I'm sure they'll endorse her. That's what they do.
Okay.
Now, that, I don't know that there's any other groups like that in other states, but in New York State, there is that. If you wanted to do that and vote for her, if you felt that New York was in play and it wouldn't be good to vote for Jill Stein or some other candidate that you felt would make a point that you have more to the left politics, but and you felt you needed to go with Clinton, well, in that case, go with Clinton on a party other than the Democratic Party if it exists.
Right, but you're basically the basic conversation here, and we're going to continue to have this conversation forever.
So we've only got a minute, and so left.
So
on
the, when we come back next week, we're going to talk about how do you be a progressive if you were supporting Bernie Sanders, if you accept that the Democratic platform has created a plan now for free in-state college tuition for persons making under $125,000 a year, which is born of the Sanders platform, raised on based off tax increases. I mean, and that this type of progressive
all good, all good. The only question is is the platform going to be upheld?
And can they deliver on this? Right, but activism got you here, and you know, without. You can't have a negotiated agreement if you can't figure out ways to agree.
Okay, but as you said, activism got you here. That's the key. And on that note, we're going to stop talking.
All right, Dad.
Right now,
you.
We'll come back to this another time.
See you next week.
See you next week.